Hi, I'm Jenny Nash, and you're listening to the Hashtag AmWriting Podcast, the place where we help writers of all kinds play big in your writing life, love the process, and stick with it long enough to finish what matters most.
Hi, I'm Jenny Nash, and you're listening to the Hashtag AmWriting Podcast. This is something new. It's a hot seat coaching episode where we're going to work through a real challenge in real time with a real writer. And today, I'm joined by a really special guest. His name is Andrew Perella, and he has been the producer of this podcast for many, many years and is stepping out from behind the microphone to write his first novel. Andrew participated in the Winter Blueprint Challenge that we recently completed, which is to say he answered all 14 of the blueprint questions during our challenge and produced a finished blueprint. And so I wanted to get on with him and talk about what do we do next? How do we go from there to the next thing? And he agreed to do that to help show our listeners how it goes. And I'm so excited about it because he just did incredible work and also has so much work to go. So hopefully we're going to get to follow Andrew as he does this for a few episodes and bring you along on the journey. So welcome, Andrew, from behind the microphone.
So much work to go. Thank you, Jenny. I'm really excited to be here.
So Andrew has a long career in public radio and is a producer of podcasts for many people and is a storytelling guy, you know, as well as a sound guy. So this is a big move. I feel like this is a right big move for you, for sure, for deciding this is the time to embrace the fact that you want to do this thing. Does it feel like that to you?
It feels like a right big move for me that I'm kind of prioritizing now this writing project for me. I'm prioritizing my project over the projects of others whom I help with projects. Yeah. So this is a right big moment for me.
It is totally a right big moment. And you're in the hot seat for some coaching, which I really appreciate you being willing to do. So where we stand today is, as I said, you finished the blueprint, you did all the work, you did the thing. So I'm just curious to sort of check in. How do you feel? Do you feel like that's an accomplishment? Do you feel some momentum? Like where are you feeling?
I feel like it is a really big accomplishment because as we were working through the blueprint, I was getting feedback from you and KJ Delantonio about how I was creating my blueprint. But it forced me to think about the book in some very real terms in ways that I hadn't yet. And in ways that, you know, I had been kind of thinking about the book in more abstract notions. And like, this was putting pen to paper on so many things to think about, you know, beyond the simple plot structure. And I realized as I was going through this, how much I hadn't yet considered. And I think this helped to show me where the holes in my story were. And even as I've finished, quote unquote, finished the blueprint, it's like I've finished one iteration of it. And like already the story has changed since I first started work on the blueprint. And so already I know I got to go back and start reiterating on this as we go along here.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the point, right? The whole point is this is a tool that reveals what's working and what's not working. Is this what I want? Does this reflect my vision? And you get to play with that wet clay of the idea. So that's really what we're doing. But the reason that I thought you'd be such a good candidate for coaching live in this way is your story It really hangs together in so many ways. It's so great in so many ways. And it would be easy to feel like, oh, I'm not that far. I got this. I can start writing. Yeah. But I hope what we're going to show is really pushing yourself to answer core questions is going to just make it so much stronger.
Absolutely.
So all that being said, what do you think the best way to share what you're writing with our listeners is? Do you think reading your book jacket copy feels good, or do you want to just say it out loud?
I feel like the book jacket copy that I wrote doesn't quite capture, I think, in many ways, what I think the book is going to be. So,
well, and we're going to actually get to
that. And we're going to get to that, I think.
So why don't you just share what it is?
So the premise of the book is this happens, the novel, it happens 20 years after the events of Bram Stoker's Dracula. And so it involves some of the same characters, and then it also involves the next generation of these characters. So those characters' children. Our protagonist is Abriana Harker, who is the daughter of Mina Harker, who was kind of the female lead in Dracula, and she was bitten by Dracula in the original novel, and she is someone who is defended by her friends and counterparts in that story. Abriana is her daughter, and Abriana is now facing a similar challenge. There are bodies that are turning up around her circle, and they appear to have similar injuries that Dracula's victims had 20 years ago. And some people recognize that and are going to begin trying to unravel the mystery. And this is all set against the backdrop of the universal suffrage movement, which is also happening in, 1920s London, where the novel is set. And so in broad strokes, that is the primary premise of the book.
So the genre is horror gothic. And I did some digging. I'm not a big reader of horror. So I did some digging into the genre to make sure that was right, because there's also thriller elements, there's mystery mm-hmm. elements, there's mm-hmm. There's other elements, and I always like to test, like, is this right, could it be tweaked, could it be better, and it feels like there's really no question about the genre, right? Do you feel that?
I definitely feel that, and I think I did, gothic is a genre that I really enjoy, and I want to develop some of those gothic themes in the story a little bit more than I have so far. But yes, I think gothic and horror is very much where this book lives. Yeah.
Yeah, and that is something I want to talk about for sure when we get to the inside outline. But I want to start with the second question of the blueprint is, what's your point? And I know this is something you've struggled with a little bit.
Yeah.
But so the current point that you have here is, I feel like maybe this came from me. So you can't change the world without upsetting people. The more you want to change, the more people you upset. And that's fine. Yeah. but it doesn't feel like it captures. There's a real moral, philosophical debate at the center of your story, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, the characters are certainly in the midst of a paradigm shift. You know, there's the world order is changing as suffrage is being opened to more and more people. And anytime the world order like that changes, there are people who are for it and there are a lot of people who are against it. And so I think that's an element in play here in the novel, and that's something that I wanted to explore. And obviously, there are parallels in current times as well for this sort of change. So I think that's certainly part of the story. Yeah.
So I was when I review a blueprint, and for anybody who's got one all on the page, and you like it, and it feels pretty good, the step is to really pressure test everything. So I read through the whole thing. I love looking at a blueprint as a whole rather than piece by piece. And in this particular case, it's like this point feels bloodless, which is something we definitely don't want in this story. So I went back to your why, and your why is really powerful and really personal and really political. It's fiery, it's articulate, like there's so much about your why that you can see my comments on the page, mm-hmm. not the listener, but Andrew can,
right.
Where I was going, great, yes, very powerful, awesome. It's excellent. And you had some lines in there about the monster in this story is not the vampire, but a man who is refusing to change with the times, basically. And that felt to me, given everything else you're saying about the parallels between this, the milieu of this story and the milieu we live in right now, the fraught climate, political climate, cultural climate, that felt more potent as a point. And I wondered what you thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is as much a part of the premise as I've conceived it as anything else that I've said. You know, the spoiler alert, the murders aren't being committed by the vampire or vampires. The murders are being committed by an old white dude who is not happy with how the politics are shifting under his feet and how the world is changing around him, and is trying to at all costs prevent that from happening, even sacrificing a bit of his own humanity in the process. And so I think that is something that certainly resonates, but I think it is, as you say, there's a passion, there's a blood there that in the why that didn't quite make it to my point.
So I would suggest for the next iteration to really push that point. And it's going to keep changing. It's going to keep, getting refined as you go. But I think it's important to move it forward as you keep writing. So the, something that's fiery and that's about, because that's you're flipping an important trope in a classic novel, right? But it's not the vampire. So like why are we flipping that? What is that showing us? What is the point of doing that in the story? That, so I would really play with that. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay. So the next thing I want to talk about is your super simple story. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about the super simple story is, I mean, I love, everybody always hears me say this who's listened to me for very long, but I love a constraint in creativity. And this trying to get this story in a really short space often reveals something. And what it was revealing to me is, so you've got Abriana. She wants to become a doctor because of her mother died in childbirth with her. So that's the storyline. You've got the murders that are happening, and then you've got the universal suffragette movement, this political debate that's going on. So there's these three threads, and even in the super simple story, it was feeling a little bit like they're disconnected. I don't think they're disconnected in your mind. I think they're disconnected on the page.
Okay.
So I wanted to just ask you to articulate that a little bit more, because you hint in the book jacket copy later, Abriana has things in common with Van Helsing, who's her uncle, the vampire hunter. Are you comfortable sharing what those are?
Yeah.
What those commonalities are?
Yeah. I think Abraham Van Helsing is a character from the original novel, and he helps guide the team to find, track down, and destroy Dracula. In the world of my novel, his understanding of vampires changes as he continues to do research on them. And so he's discovered more about them that will spell out a little bit more in the novel. But first and foremost, and one of the primary roles he plays in the original novel is as a doctor. And that's one thing that Abriana really admires about him. He becomes a bit of a surrogate parent to her, with her mother dying and her father's grief turning into a little bit of emotional distance from Abriana. And so Van Helsing kind of fills that gap. And so she associates her, I think her desire to become a doctor stems from both her birth, you know, ultimately killing her mother, but also because and wanting to prevent that from happening to other women, but also because she's seen, you know, Van Helsing perform his service as a doctor. She's seen it in action and what it can do, and wants to emulate that. And so, and I think one of the things that I get excited about is incorporating a little bit of like historic realism into the novel as well. And there was in the 1920s the London School of Medicine for Women. It had been open for a decade or so. It was still a fairly new school at the time, and so that there was a real place that she would have been able to go and get an education is something that I'm excited to have part of the novel. And like, that school wouldn't have been possible if it was not for the women's liberation movement, which resulted obviously in the universal suffrage movement. And so all of that, I feel, kind of ties together in a way that I haven't explained very well in my super simple copy, super simple story explanation there.
So that's what I'm trying to get at, is Avrianna is not just some random young woman.
No.
I mean, she's very clearly descended from a particular family who's had a particular thing happen in, you know, their several generations. So have you designed her as a protagonist using those elements of the family yet? Or is it more kind of just convenient that she's there? Does that make sense?
I think so. And I think it's probably somewhere in the middle. I think I like the idea of tying her into these characters that who have an existing history. And it then gives her a little bit of gravitas for the listener when they start digging in, that maybe they have read Dracula and are familiar with those characters. And so, okay, this is the next generation. But yeah, I mean, I think Avrianna reflects a lot of other things that aren't represented in the original novel.
I guess what I'm saying is, it feels, one of my concerns is it feels as if you could write this story about Avrianna and not have her be from this family. She could be kind of anyone.
Gotcha.
In this situation.
Gotcha.
Am I missing that? What would make, you know, let's just, I know there's several women in the novel who have important roles, so I'm going to pick a name that's not them. Let's say that there's a young woman, Catherine, you know, not connected to Van Helsing, not connected to her mother, not connected to that whole thing. And same time period, same motivation. She wants to be a doctor. Maybe she had someone in her family die and that's her motivation. You know, like suffragists, like that whole story could still play out with Catherine. Am I wrong? I want you to prove me wrong.
So, like, yes, it could. I feel like one of the things I like about tying in Van Helsing is it presents a red herring, in the sense that it's like, oh, we all think that we're going to find out vampires are responsible for all of these deaths. Like, I don't know, like, and I can kind of slow burn the reveal of vampires in general and how they end up not actually being the antagonists in this by borrowing his name and sharing his glory a little bit. Yeah.
Right. But back to Catherine, our mm-hmm. mythical protagonist.
Yeah.
Same thing could happen there. Everybody thinks, oh, the vampires are back. Catherine, you know, they keep happening around her. She's got to figure it out. You know what I mean? So.
Well, so. So is, yeah.
The, no, go ahead.
the question I think that I've been grappling a bit with too is, do we exist in a world where does the world of the novel a place where people have recognized the efforts of Van Helsing and that vampires exist. Is that common knowledge in this world, or is all of that still unknown to folks?
Okay, this is the piece that I've been missing.
Okay.
That's exactly the piece that I've been missing. That's totally it. So here, this is world building. If anybody's writing anything with magic, fantasy, sci-fi, even just straight up history, and maybe it's a retelling or a reimagining, you have to know those questions for sure. And especially for my understanding, I'm like I said, I'm not a horror reader, but I do know a little bit about Dracula, but it was a sort of science versus science played a big role in that. What can we know? Mm-hmm. What can we prove? What is unknowable? Mm-hmm. Those sorts of things.
Absolutely.
So that you've got to know that mm-hmm. here. Has it been proved? Is it accepted knowledge? Is Van Helsing a hero who's locked away in his lab, continuing to, you know, with funding and whatever to research his thing, or is he some, you know, recluse who was shamed in the public eye and people think he's crazy? Like, that's going to color everything.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's going to then be the answer I'm looking for. Like, why Abrianna as our protagonist and not Catherine, right? So she's going to have that. You imagine her going to medical school with those two different stories behind her, how different it's going to be when she shows up in the classroom and people know, or when they know who she is.
Right. Yeah.
So there's a reveal to the reader about her connection and who she is. And then her reveal to the society she lives in about who she is and, you know, the meaning she makes from all that, you know. And no matter what you decide about Van Helsing, then you have to also decide about her. Does she agree with the prevailing wisdom? If everybody thinks he's a hero, does she think he is too? Or does she think he's kind of whacked and then learns otherwise? Or the other way around,
yeah.
Right? So, yeah, this is the piece that's missing, is I feel like you have, and this is what I felt the second I heard you talk about your story. I'm like, oh, this could be so good. Like, this is so potent, but you're missing it. It's not landing as solid as it should. And I think this is why.
Right.
I had not been able to figure it out, but that. And you have, so I got to make sure I understand the character. So Abrianna's dad is the brother of Van Helsing.
They're not related in the original novel. They're just friends. But they're close friends. And because Van Helsing ultimately saved both of their lives, he is kind of a surrogate uncle. So uncle in quotation marks. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Uncle is an honorific.
An honorific.
Okay.
Exactly.
That,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Yep.
That confused me.
Okay.
So I thought that there was a direct lineage there.
Right.
But there's not.
No genetic link. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But a link through her mother. A link to Van Helsing through the mother.
Yes.
And what happened to her. So... okay, yeah, we have to understand his role, who he is, what he's doing in the world, what people think of him. Mm-hmm. And also, this is important for just the environment of your story, because we've got this division, political division around the suffragette movement. Are there other... I want to say mood, like what's the mood of the place where this story is taking place? Is it, you know, a creeping sense of doom on many levels? Is the fact, oh, maybe the vampires are back, does that make sense for the times? Like you and I are talking right now in 2026, during very extreme political upheaval, and also during the time when there's been this kidnapping of this prominent media personality's family member that hasn't been solved. And there's this sense like, well, of course this is happening now. Like this, you know, is there a weird, are we going to have a famous serial killer story unfolding in our time? Like, right. That's what I keep thinking. Like, there's a sense of course these things are going to start happening now because things feel so unstable and unsettled.
Yeah.
Is that what's going on there?
I mean, I think potentially, yes. I feel like this, it was an unsettled moment politically and also a little bit medically as the medical establishment is transitioning from miasma theory to germ theory. And that was kind of late 19th century, early 20th century. But like there's kind of been a paradigm shift there. So I feel like there does want to be, as you were saying, kind of like this constant creepy feeling. I like to lean into the gothic. I really want that to pervade every chapter, every page. I want that kind of like creeping sensation that doom is around the corner.
Right, and doom from many sources.
Right.
Because I think that's your kind of one of your points.
Mm-hmm.
Is, well, what I'm going back to what the point was. The point we're kind of leaning toward is people who refuse to evolve when the world demands it can become monsters. So the world is evolving in many different ways and probably getting the opportunity for a lot of different people to have to evolve in a lot of different ways. It's not just one way. It's not just like, oh, get on this bus or you're missing, get on, you know, what's the metaphor? Like, you'll miss the boat if you don't get on the boat. But it feels like there's all kinds of boats one might miss here.
Right.
I think so. That's that. Yeah. Okay. So in terms of what to do next, I think your homework here is you got to get to know Van Helsing
and the
world a little bit better. So I would do some character development work on him and what the world thinks of him and what Abrianna's stepping into the light by insisting on going to medical school does to Van Helsing. Does it delight him? Does it challenge him? Does it, you know, what does he think of that? I think that's important.
Yeah.
To know too.
Yeah.
A couple
of things are occurring to me. I think I had taken for granted the reader's knowledge of the events of Dracula, and I don't think I can do that. I think I need to develop these characters for my own, as you're saying, I have to develop the Van Helsing character. I have to develop him for my own purposes for this novel, which makes a lot of sense.
Well, that's actually a really good question. You defined your ideal reader in a way that I thought was completely delightful. Like, she was so fleshed out. She felt like a full-on character. And I was like, oh, I know that woman. I loved it. It was great. But an important piece you missed in that is you said that she enjoys books about London, the city, and maybe some horror and gothic, but what is her relationship to Dracula, your ideal reader? You need to know that.
Yeah.
You know, this is what's funny sometimes about being a book coach is I always say that the writer's the god of their own story. I can't possibly know everything that the writer knows about what they're writing about, what they've read, what they've thought, how they've lived, any of it. And in this particular case, I don't read horror. I could barely tell you the bare outlines of Dracula if pressed. I mean, I know the cartoon version. I could tell you a little more about Frankenstein only because I, against my will, watched the recent retelling.
Oh yeah, I haven't actually seen that yet.
So I say against my will because I was like, oh my gosh, this is too much for me. But you need to know if. So here's a perfect, let me finish my sentence. You need to know if your reader is a fan, is a reader, is a immersed in the Gothic world, is going to know all these things and know all the tropes and know all the connections or not. And the perfect example of that is, remember that book, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies?
Yes.
So that appealed to people who love Jane Austen. Mm-hmm. Like, you're probably not going to read that book if you're not a Jane Austen fan. But if you are a Jane Austen fan, you cannot wait to get your hands on that. And also probably if you're a zombie horror fan, you know, you would delight in that even if you didn't understand the depths of the Jane Austen piece. But that book spoke to such a very particular audience that turned out to be a massive audience. Right. So,
yeah.
You know, I think you need to make a decision. Are you writing for someone like me who's like, I don't know. Like, I think when I first read it, I was like, who's Van Helsing? And you're like, he's the famous guy from the thing. Right. So are you writing for someone like me, or does your avatar, your ideal reader here, you know, does she watch the movie? Does she read the books? Does she gobble that stuff up?
Right. Yeah.
What is your instinct right now?
Singling out one or the other is going to change how I write the book. What is my instinct? I don't know. When I think about the character the character of the reader that I fleshed out in the blueprint. I don't think she necessarily would have read Dracula. She might be familiar with the story, but she might not have have read Dracula itself.
Okay, so yeah, let's get really clear on that, because it's mm-hmm. going to really change. And for those listening, the ideal reader, oftentimes people think it's just a throwaway part of the blueprint because they kind of can just picture, you know, generally who their reader is. I mean, first of all, no part of the blueprint is to throw away. Something really important can come from any one of these. So really go back to your ideal reader and think about them in relationship to their story, because this conversation reveals how drastically you would change the writing of this book depending on your ideal reader's relationship to Dracula.
Yeah.
And there's no right answer. Either answer's great, right? So that's, I just put that on the list of things too, that you're going to be thinking about. So once you get that, the understanding of Van Helsing's reputation in the universe right now is going to be the way that you bring your reader up to speed a little bit, right? Like, famous vampire hunter, still doing his thing, or famous vampire hunter, you know, shamed and not doing his thing. Those are going to tie together.
Right. Yeah.
And cement down the world that we're coming into more.
Absolutely. I can see how that will change things. Yeah.
Okay. So we're not going to have time to dig into this yet, but I just want to touch on it so that when you're doing this work, you can be thinking about this piece. But there's a cause and effect trajectory. That's obviously what the inside outline is. And at some really key places in yours, you miss an opportunity to to tie in. So we always want our protagonist to have agency, to be making the decisions that cause things to get worse or cause them to be in a worse position, or and there's several places in your inside outline where things just sort of happen, which is the plot, and then she sort of happens to be there. But if you understand better these parts of her and her connection to this, this guy, and her connection to what's happened with her mother and those things, then we want to use that to push the story, to push the, so the plot has to serve the story. So the things that happen are going to push your character in ways they don't want to be pushed, to make decisions that are going to then push them further, and they're going to get deeper and deeper each time. And you have a murder mystery. So each murder, we want to feel more and more as if she is boxing herself in by what she does, by what she thinks, by what she believes, by what she wants. And the plot is going to squeeze her to the point where she has to make a big decision, you know, comes, that's the climax, comes to that. Like, will I, in this case, confront both the murderer and her father is right. Kind of where it all ends. So,
yeah,
you know, it's not going to be just like, and now we arrive at a place where she confronts the people. It's got to be like gut wrenching along the way, right?
Right.
So there's a lot to say there. And I made some comments on the outline, which you'll see sort of my thoughts and thinking there. But I actually think that this conversation we've had is going to be the solution. Because the big question I had was, is it coincidental that Abrianna is, these murders are sort of following her around and people think that she might be responsible. Is that coincidental or is there something real there? Yeah. Do you know the answer or not?
I've been thinking about that. And I think there are ways that it's not entirely coincidental. I mean, obviously she's not causing the murders, but I think there are things that she does that prompts these women to become targets of the murderer.
That's what I hoped you were going to say. Cause yeah. I think this was on the page and maybe you didn't realize it, but being friends with Adriana is a little dangerous. Right?
Yes. Yes. I think that could definitely be part of the theme there. Yeah.
So that shouldn't be coincidental. Well, and this is what's so great about the blueprint and showing it to a critique partner or a writing group or an editor or a book coach is somebody else can say, do you see that you're doing this thing that's actually really cool? Or do you see that you're not doing this? Like, it's, things are just revealed. So
yeah, absolutely.
So let's just wrap this up. Your next iteration, you're going to work on sharpening your point. You're going to work on sharpening the super simple story so that the Dracula connection is clear. Dracula connection to your protagonist is more clear. And you're going to, in order to do that, you're going to understand Van Helsing, the world that we live in and what his relationship of that world is 20 years after Dracula, what is happening with him, what is happening with the world. And that's going to help inform the connection between your protagonist and these things. And then I think you already answered the ideal reader, but just make sure that you're comfortable with that, that she's not a super fan. This is not an insider, folks who know and love and read Dracula. It's more someone like me who's a little clueless. And then if you have time to dig into how that all plays out in the cause and effect of the inside outline, that's where I would go. So it's, I had an agent, my first agent way back in the day, he used to say, run it through the typewriter one more time, because we were actually writing on typewriters in the day. And that's kind of what I feel, you know, with these ideas in mind, like run it all through one more time and let it all flow through one more time. And we'll see where it goes.
Excellent. No, this sounds good. This is some good homework. I'm looking forward to digging into this now.
I know. I can't wait to see too. And I hope our listeners have enjoyed going along on this conversation and gotten some inspiration for how to pressure test your own blueprint. And if you're not doing the blueprint, also fine, but pressure test what you're writing. This is just a tool for doing that. But this kind of questioning and making sure that things are not assumed. That's the key, right? You sort of make these assumptions, but we have to articulate them and pin them down so that we can use them to make a much better story. Well, thank you, Andrew. Really, thank you for being willing to expose yourself in this way, come out from behind the mic, share your journey. It's not easy to do that, and I appreciate it.
Well, it's fun. Thank you for pushing me outside my comfort zone. I've really enjoyed this.
I have too. So for our listeners, thanks for joining in. Now let's get back to work.
The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perilla. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.